Starting the recording. Hi, welcome to the Pony Sync for November 27th, 2018. Everybody want to just say hi?
Hi.
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 Hello.
I guess I probably should have been more specific about like introducing ourselves, but that was good enough. Okay.
you get what you ask for.
I do. I've made my request and I'm paying for it. Okay. Without further ado, let us jump into the RFCs. So we have, is there an RFC you wanted to talk about, Sean?
Well, there's the one that's in final comment, which I just looked at, 135, add RFC for modulo operator.
Uh-huh. That's a good one.
Yes.
What would you like to say about this?
So I'm kind of concerned about the, I'm concerned about this in general. So this appears to be, it's a module operator, which is for integer types, right? Which, so what does this do, I guess, for floats? And it's the percentage sign, where I would be surprised, is for modulo rather than the single percentage sign, which is for remainder, right? Which it sort of feels like the original one being for remainder was not intentional. It was more of a, I think it was more of a bug than anything else. And it kind of feels, my thing of least surprise would be is to have, the modulo thing be just percentage sign.
The reason that it isn't is that C and C++, the percentage sign, while we all say mod, means remainder.
Okay. I see.
And in fact, that holds true across many languages.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's an issue ticket, and I think we had this discussion in the previous sync call too, where we kind of decided on this path forward. I'm not saying it can't be changed. I'm just saying that like that there was some prior discussion on this, and one of the reasons why we chose this path is because we felt it was most consistent with what other languages offer. For languages that care enough about pedantry to make this distinction.
Okay, so then I guess I have a few questions which are not in the RFC, right? It says this is defined for integer types. So what does the single percentage remainder do when it's on a float? Is it doing remainder on floats? And there's no modulo for floats?
So there is floating point and fmod, which is how C and C++ do floating point modulus, is in fact dividend based, which means that it is equivalent to remainder on integer mathematics. So what we don't have is a definition of what, in some sense, our single percent is consistent and everything's fine. It's what does double percent mean in the case of floating point modulus? And probably we should make it, was probably not the right thing to say. Amongst the choices we could do is we could do the equivalent of C and C++, i.e. standard remainder. That's nearest to zero, which is different from divisor. Divisor is the more strict modulus. Just to give a quick summary of for floating point modulus, languages that use percent to mean dividend based, which is what Pony does, are C, C++, C sharp, D, F sharp, Go, Java, JavaScript, interestingly, not Python. Python's percent is divisor, and it's math.fmod that is dividend. Similarly, Ruby percent is divisor for floating point mathematics, and that's pretty much the summary.
So is our...
Mind is the meaning of double percent for floating point, I think.
It is. So our, but our single one right now on floats does what?
Dividend based. It does the same thing as C, C++, C sharp, Java, JavaScript.
So it's REM, basically.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier. It's easier to talk about that as result has the same sign as the dividend.
Okay.
Which for integer mathematics is what REM means. Assigning a correct meaning to that in floating point mathematics is, yeah, a little bit harder to talk about.
So.
Because the core difference, right, is whether the result has the same sign as the dividend or the same sign as the divisor. And there are, in floating point world, there are some other choices.
Okay. So for example, right now I can call REM on an F64. There's a REM function on an F64 in Pony.
Yeah, let me find the implementation. By floating point implementation. There it is. So there's not a REM in there right now, is there?
Yes, there is. You can try it in the Pony Playground if you want. I created two F64s and I can call REM on either one of them, passing the other in. I'll provide a link in the Zoom chat for a moment for anybody who wants to click through and try it out. This is right here for the playground. Okay, yep, boom, dropped in there.
Tracking down, there it is. Picked up from real. So the implementation let me find the compiler implementation the back end. Does anyone happen to remember on the back end which file does that? And the Pony C?
No, I do not.
It's probably gen operator.
I think so.
Yeah, something like gen operator or gen primitive or something like that.
Yeah. So it's LVM build FREM.
Make div here's so yeah, there's a make div rem and gen operator.
Yep. But the key is the make unsafe FREM. So it's line 593 in code gen, in genoperator.c.
Yep.
So let's double check. How FREM is implemented. This is a good question. Okay. So it remainder has the same size as the dividend when calling FREM. So that being percent going down to LVM build FREM is correct, which is good.
So is the idea behind this then that you can't do mod on floats for?
The only question is. What should we do about the sign? And I think that we should be consistent and make it the divisor. That would be consistent with, unfortunately, the C and C++ implementation of FMOD is to do REM, and the C and C++ implementation of remainder over floats, i.e. standard remainder, is nearest to zero, which is staggeringly wrong. But I think having actual mod be divisor is both consistent with integer mathematics and fits in relatively well with other languages. For example, other than the symbol used, it fits in with Ruby and Python, it fits in with Haskell, it fits in, well, unfortunately, Fortran calls them mod and modulo instead of rem and mod, but hopefully speaking, fits in. Does what Common Lisp does, so that makes me happy.
Does that make sense to everyone else?
Yeah, I was just typing up a comment on the thread saying that you, Sean, commented during sync this should probably be added for floating point types.
Oh yes, I have a full comment here as well for that.
Excellent. I'll let you do that then. But yeah, I agree. If we have REM for floats, in a way that is consistent with REM for integers, we should have mod for floats in a way that's consistent with mod.
Cool. All right. That was all of my stuff on it for right now.
Cool.
Also, I'm probably going to start using the term floored division a lot, but it's not going to mean the same thing when I say it. Oh my God, I got floored by that division. That's some floored division. I'm an awful person.
Slow clap.
No, you don't get to say slow clap. You have to actually do it.
No, I think in this case, a verbal slow clap is very appropriate. Okay.
Silent appreciation. Yeah. Number 133 in the RFC's repo is ready for a vote.
Excellent.
I should
the binary heaps one.
Catch up and read it.
Adding a new collection type, binary heaps.
It's lovely. I would like to vote yes.
Yeah, I have voted yes. Matthias also voted yes in the in the comments.
Okay. Any no votes?
I vote yes.
Right. I gotta go put my. I put a plus one on it.
I put a thumbs up on the thumbs up, which kind of makes me happy.
Okay, now we're just getting silly. Okay. All right. Yes. It's been accepted. Housekeeping is needed for creation of issues, etc. Can you do that? All right, merging. Cool. Do we have the other ones that are here for like higher kinded types and well, have 134, 131, or 130? They seem to have some stuff going on here. Yes. Should we discuss those? Or no?
I think going through the higher kind of type stuff would be really useful, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, my comment here was that, like, I will have to consider how it's going to be implemented. I'm not sure there's a lot of detail on that in the RFC, which is maybe not that surprising because I'm not familiar with this contributor. I think it's a first-time contributor, so... this person may not be very familiar with the compiler yet, and I just want to make sure that as part of this, we are considering the sort of like larger implementation details.
Yeah. So for me, I think this is actually an important missing piece. And funnily enough, I think one of the important things to talk about is if we allow underscores such that in the example, it's a functor over F, which F is a higher kind of type over a single type, but that type is not specified. Then you want to fill it in, right? So the syntax that is there is a little bit interesting, and given some A and B, we're going to fill in that F, and there's sort of a big difference between a type that comes in such that you want to be able to reference the type variables that the type that was passed in has, or one where you're allowed to provide a type that is not fully specified. Am I making any sense there? So let's say you have some type with a placeholder for a type variable.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that you might want to do is to fulfill that with something fully specified. So let's say it says, I'm looking for some T underscore, and you say, okay, here's an array of I32. Such that then if you say, oh, what's T dot and the type that you want to reference out of it, i.e. that first element, and it could provide that type. Does that make sense?
Yes, I'm nothing immediately pops to mind of when I'd want to do that.
So one example that is quite useful is, let's say you constrain it to be a read sequence. You have some T which is constrained to be a read sequence of underscore. Now, if you could now talk about T dot A, which is the type that the read sequence that you provided is instantiated over.
Mm-hmm. And why would I want to do that?
It's quite, you can, for example, write a sequence iterator that is applicable to all possible read sequences this way, but it's still specialized, and you get the fastest code.
Right, so okay, so this would basically be so I could provide a better implementation based on the type for something, as compared to...
Not necessarily better implementation based on the type, but just a reifiable implementation based on the type, but you only have to write it once. So now, instead of writing an array iterator and list is a terrible example because a list isn't a real sequence. I mean, it is a sequence, we all know that, but it's not the one we want because it doesn't have random access. But instead of providing an array iterator and a skip list iterator, for example, you can just provide a sequence iterator, and then that gives you an iterator over any random access, or actually with a better implementation. But that's different from the kind of higher kinded type that you want in his example, where you've got a functor and now you've got a map, and what you want to provide is in some sense the type that you are going to then provide the internal instantiation over. So in that map, it says interface functor F underscore, but actually there needs to be a constraint there. Because when map is going to be wanting a container in any real implementation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right.
So, I think the drawbacks listed scary for users and maintainers. I think that's a pretty accurate drawback. On the other hand, I don't think it's fundamentally scarier than the polymorphism mechanisms we already have. What do you all think?
From your earlier comment, it sounds like you're talking about a different feature than what the RFC author is talking about. Is that
it's more that I think if we're going to go down this route, we need to make sure that we provide both uses of higher kinded types.
Okay.
But it is fundamentally the same thing. I suppose that's not necessarily true. Maybe you're right. Maybe what I'm talking about is higher kinded types that allow you to refer to path dependent types, whereas this RFC is talking only about higher kinded types. So maybe it's better to say yes, you're right.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that I opened the other RFC earlier, 123, about the use site variants, implicit interfaces sort of stuff. And this sort of ended with a suggestion from you, Sylvan. The last comment in that thread there is, I understand Joe's use case better now. I think this is more in the vein of the higher kind of types. So let's think about expanding this RFC to be a higher kind of types.
Thank you. I've completely forgotten about this. Thank you. Okay.
That's 123?
Yeah, let's have a look at 123.
I had forgotten about that.
Right, where we're essentially doing interface generation.
Yeah. But you were suggesting maybe a better way to solve this problem is not interface generation, but through that kind of types, or it was related somehow.
Yep. Yeah, so with higher kinded types, it would be fine to talk about the use of elements underscore without simply as a higher kinded type. That is then a valid type, and you can pass that around, and inherently you cannot refer to elements.a. Sorry, that's sort of straw man syntax for what that might look like, right? To talk about A in that context, because you don't know what it is. But that doesn't give you the covariance and contravariance And I feel like there was a system we had been talking about that included that. So I think for this RFC, using elements underscore fits very nicely into the higher kinded types. But the plus and minus annotation really is an additional feature because it is, interestingly, it's cone contravariance, which is something, the cone contravariance annotation is something I was quite keen to get away from by using structural types, but the use in the other direction to generate structural types using them I had never considered, and it is interesting. Okay, am I just babbling meaninglessly, or does this make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I'm just trying to, I don't know, I'm trying to process how we can draw it together. Like, it sounds like, so, you know, you establish that the Cohen contravariance is a separate kind of feature request, although possibly related. The underscore usage here was proposed to be done through, like, the same, like, sort of interface generation style, which... maybe we should like compare and contrast that with other versions of higher kind of type implementations.
Yeah, I think we should. Probably the right place to look at the way higher kind of types is handled is Scala. Scala's higher kind of types. Do a nice job of straddling the functional and object-oriented world in much the way Scala does in a lot of places, and it's sort of in some ways similar to what Pony needs to do here. I'll certainly read up on it. If anyone else has time to read up on it, that would be fantastic, and we could maybe pick this up again next week.
That sounds reasonable, although I don't have time to read up on Scala's higher kind of types during that, but a bit more investigation into it, whatnot.
I'll try to read up on it. Sylvan, if you find resources that you're reading through, can you also forward those to me?
Totally.
So I have a question on this, but in a slightly different direction, Sylvan.
Yeah.
So are you're thinking, I assume then for this, that that there would be a reification of this for each type so that in the end we should end up with like for the actual usage of this, they should end up being monomorphic.
Yeah, they'll be fully reified.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, you know, that's always stuck back in my mind is like, what's the performance gonna be like? What are we thinking here? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure we're thinking this, but let's ask just to make sure, because you know. Yeah. Pretty sure and sure are two different things.
Yeah, and so the only time we would be using even virtual dispatch is if you ended up wanting to reify it over a trait or an interface, which is fine. You're intentionally paying the virtual dispatch cost because you're intending to use different concrete types with the same implementation.
Okay, well, I think that leaves that one in a reasonable place, and we can pick up next week.
Okay, cool.
I'm writing that up in here.
I was doing that too. Okay, I'll let you do it.
What's next?
Sorry. Were there any other RFCs that we wanted to discuss?
So there's 129.
Which is 129?
Function argument alias.
Functional argument alias.
So the core, yeah. So shadowing, of course, makes me incredibly nervous. I find that shadowing is almost always just a bug. At the same time, I understand that it is occasionally quite annoying to people to have things like not being able to have an accessor function with the same name as the field and disambiguate that at by whether it's called or not called. That's not what this RFC goes into, but rather this one particularly handles formal parameters, method arguments, shadowing members. The as syntax, I think, is too much. I don't think we want that. I think that makes it heavier weight rather than lighter weight. Joe's comment from September 26, I think, is still sort of the state of the world, which is that if we were to go down this route of allowing locals to shadow members, then we could allow that in the sense of members always being still being available as this dot, but it will lead to bugs, right?
I'm just not in favor of this.
One of the options that, like, if we were if we were starting from scratch here, maybe one of the things I would suggest, which we're not, obviously we have context and in source code that we want to keep looking and things like that, but you know, one of the things that I've kind of come to the conclusion on this, like, to avoid shadowing issues, that, like, members should always have, like, some sort of prefix that clearly distinguishes them from for example, like, it could be like an at symbol to delineate, like, you're looking at a member rather than a local or
So warding for namespacing is very powerful, and it does get you a lot of stuff. For example, TypeScript enforces that all members must be accessed as this dot always, everywhere.
Yeah.
And that really totally addresses this problem.
Yeah, in CoffeeScript, the at symbol is like syntax sugar for this dot.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I would be in favor of an RFC that does something like that and addresses the root thing. I feel like this is a really bad in-between compromise.
Okay.
It solves a minor annoyance with the possibility of creating bugs.
Yeah, and like, as I mentioned in my comment down at the bottom of the thread, I mean, I think it's not even that desirable of a solution for the minor annoyance, because it makes it puts the burden on the library writers to solve problems for the callers.
Yeah.
And in a way that's more verbose, and so they're just not going to do it, and the callers are going to have the same problem.
Yeah.
They now have.
Yeah. So my favorite wart, if we were to go down the wart route, and I'm not saying we're going to go down the wart route, but if anybody wanted to think about it, my favorite wart is actually the TypeScript one, because it's immediately recognizable to say that to get at a member you need this dot. Essentially, what it's doing is taking away the syntactic sugar of aligning this dot. That seems reasonable. On the other hand, there is a reasonable complaint that it blows up code sizes.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of why I favored having like a single character version of that, because it's so common that having a single character represent that seems reasonable. And I would add that like in most of my code, what it ends up looking like if it assuming it's any class of like non-trivial complexity, there's like the members are private with an underscore in front. Parameters always have a prime, and like accessors have like the getters have just like the name of the field. So I've already, you already kind of fall into this system where members are the only ones that can have the underscore in front, because that's, it's private and you don't have like private locals or anything like that. So these, like, it's a way of delineating it already. Underscore, but you know, we could probably go further and, or not further, but like if we had a single character that represented this dot, which I don't know that there are any good ones left at this point in our syntax, but you know, if we did, then that could be an option. I mean, I guess the other thing would be like figuring out how to distinguish, you know, we could change the syntax for FFI calls to free up the at, but that's, pretty big breaking change.
Yeah.
So the thing with, in my first initial thought was I would be in favor of making everything go through this dot, right? But really, as Joe kind of pointed out, that's really the only place where this is actually, this ever comes up as any kind of issue, really, for solving the problem that's being talked about here, is for things where it's a public field, right? Like the fact that it is a private field means that with the underscore, like this is
a public method name, right? Not necessarily a field.
So I'd have to call this dot for each public method name?
In the sense that if you're gonna allow the local variable to shadow a method name, right, that's also a decision. You could say that you can't have a local variable that shadows a method name, but that is a distinction, right?
I think if you, I don't like shadowing.
Because we do have a distinction, because it's possible that you are wanting the apply sugar over a local variable as opposed to an invocation of the public method. So there's a quite serious ambiguity there.
Yep.
So if it's allowed to have the same name, then you need this dot over calls as well as fields access. And the other option, again, is to say, you go ahead and allow locals and in fact, we could even say it's just arguments, right? I don't think there's a horrible inconsistency there. But just say that arguments are allowed to shadow public.
That is the sort of edge case thing, which I just feel like would bite lots of people in the ass. Like it's so inconsistent. Hey, in this one case, you can shadow things.
I don't necessarily think this is a good option, but another option to consider is to have it be such that if you list a field name as a parameter, then the that syntax sugar for immediately assigning the field name to the value of that parameter, such that it's not really shadowing. It's like
it is in fact the use of that name.
Yes.
Yep. That you're binding in advance to the field.
Right. Which you couldn't use if you were going to do any kind of like logic on, or, you know, a transformation of that value first, you'd have to use a different name.
Right.
But, yeah.
So I kind of like that one. I think that's consistent. And it works well. It also made me think of another thing we could do, which perhaps is silly, I don't know. But if we accepted, because essentially the name of the argument at the definition site is only meaningful to the call site if you're doing passing arguments by name instead of by ordinal, right? Instead of by position. Am I missing anything?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
We could say that if you pass by name without a prime and the name has a prime, that we go ahead and use the one with the prime.
Yeah, I think that's one that that we discussed in the past, and I'm in favor of that option as well. Such that, yeah, you can omit primes for named arguments, and have the compiler, if there is no such primed argument, it tries removing the prime. And
so that sounds like a lot of complexity to solve what as a problem? Like the only one of these that feels even that feels like something I would be in support of is the not alighting this. Like everything else just feels like it's a lot of complexity, edge case thing, et cetera, for how we do all of this stuff here. It's like this in this one particular scenario for what exactly? I mean, like we should either allow shadowing or we shouldn't, I think. Like,
well, all of the things, these last two that we're coming up with are going down the route of let's not allow shadowing, but solve this particular interface issue.
I don't think this, this doesn't feel like a particularly important interface issue, whereas we're talking about adding additional complexity to the compiler and everything else in order to handle a thing, which in the end is like, this more than anything else feels like an aesthetic thing to me. Like we're solving a fundamentally an aesthetic problem. There is no semantic thing which is being fixed here.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. It is an interface issue.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment as well. I do think that aesthetics can be important in terms of productivity, but I totally agree with your assessment that it is not a semantic issue, and and we should be very wary of additional complexity for people to keep their heads around. I agree with all that.
Yeah.
And if this was an aesthetic issue that everybody ran into all the time, I'd be far more willing to take on complexity for it. But this is like, I've been writing code pony for how long? Like 2-3 years now. And I think I've ever considered wanting something like this maybe once in passing. Maybe that has something to do with how I write code, et cetera, everything. But it's just, at least in my mind, it's not a particularly big issue.
Yeah, from my perspective, something like the automatic assignment, if you use the field name as an argument name, something like that is appealing to me and something that I think would.
So the reason I like that the best of the solutions that we've talked about so far is that it actually, in many cases, means reducing your code burden rather than increasing it.
Right.
Wait, which one reduces? What reduces the code burden?
Well, in constructors, we have a lot of, as in the example, name equals name prime. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? That's nice. But in the particular one that Joe's talking about, you would just say name, that it has an argument name of type string. It has a field of name of type string. Therefore, such an argument in a constructor is implicitly assignment to that, and you're done. You don't have to write that. And that is actually exactly what constructors in some languages do, for example, Scala and F#. And it's nice. You're actually reducing your code burden rather than adding like this dot everywhere, which, you know, once you start, if you put this dot in a couple places, that's all fine and well. When you have it everywhere, whoo. So I kind of the ones we've talked about, I think that is the one that addresses this specific issue, but also does something else nice, whereas none of the other ones do anything except address this specific issue and sometimes make things worse.
Yeah, when it comes to the implicit prime one, I agree. I don't have the need to use that often, but I honestly, I don't use named arguments that often.
To be honest,
it's really rare that I do.
Yeah, I question the original decision that is my fault, but anyway, of putting named arguments in the language.
Okay, if we want to open that one up, I agree with your questioning of that.
Yeah, I don't use them. I don't find them to be a particular improvement. I think that the TypeScript approach of saying if you want that, pass an object that has all of the things that you're going to read, and that object's constructor allows you to align some things when you want to, is actually a lot cleaner.
It might be, but there, hey, now I just created an extra object.
Indeed, yeah, that's absolutely.
Yeah, I kind of like the concept of named arguments, but it in the presence of the, like, you're making the caller worry about naming that was really designed for the internal use of the function, right?
Right. Exactly.
It's almost as if we need a separate syntax for declaring. No, that's not right either.
Careful there.
I like the named arguments in practice, and I think they could be really useful, but they're just not that useful right now because and it's also doing a lot to expose internal implementation details to the caller on things like a library where the library shouldn't have to care what I called my. You know, I could choose that I want to use single letter function parameters, just for brevity on the implementation side. And that shouldn't make a difference to the caller when I switch from one to the other. And it does right now.
So yeah. The one place where I found the name functions to be useful, and this has been very, very rare, is when I have more than one default value, which is being used with a function, right? And in particular, if I have multiples of those. So yeah. I don't, if but let's just take the case where I have a function which has two default parameters, right? I don't actually want to override the first default parameter. I only want to do the second one. So I'll use where to override that. And then in the future, if the first default parameter gets changed, I don't have to worry about the fact that I had to pass in a value for it by looking at the code and seeing what's the current default value for this. I want to use that. And now I want to change the default value for the second.
That is the specific use case that motivated named arguments in the first place.
Yep. And I think...
Go ahead.
No, keep going.
I was going to suggest that one option here, some languages have named tuples such that you can construct what is at compile time a tuple, but instead of using dot underscore one, dot underscore two, that sort of thing, to access the members of it, like the tuple members have names.
It's a value type record, Sean.
They're like the records from Erlang, right?
The point here is that you were talking about worrying about the extra object allocation. That's why I specifically suggested this as an option, because if you have a named tuple that compiles down to just a plain tuple at compile time, then you don't have that allocation unless you're boxing it or whatever.
So here's an interesting thing.
Did I was supposed to write an RFC for these about a year and a half ago?
No, maybe, but...
no, but no. Yes.
The thing that I was going to say is, one of the things that I've been experimenting with at a type system level is that value types right now are only encoded in Pony as tuples. And it means that we cannot do something like an array of some object type where the array is not pointers to those object type, but actually an array of object type, i.e. a C-style array.
Doesn't struct do that? If you have an array of a struct?
No.
Okay.
In fact, The only thing it does is, so it's not like C sharp where struct is the indicator for value type. All that struct does is align the object header and right. allow you to have C compatible types.
Okay.
Embed kind of does it, but it only does it for fields.
Okay. But yeah, but array of struct is not C compatible with an array of the C compatible struct. Right. At this point.
Yeah. So it's possible that with some thought, we could introduce the idea of value types, where value type is inherently mutable because you need to be able to construct the darn thing. That's not necessarily true. Let me take that back. It is present. and what exactly that means is complicated. And it probably is its own reference capability. And yeah, whether you can combine that with some idea that it is read-only in some sense at post-construction is an interesting question. Certainly it is not in the grand sense isolated ISO or val because you can't pass it because it's present in the parent data structure. Yeah,
mutation on value types can be a little bit confusing if it's not presented in a way that is intuitive.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. And it gets into interesting semantics, but in some sense, we've hidden that in a, I think, clumsy way using tuples and forcing all value types to be tuples. I think it would be nice to expose that as a first-class thing. I think it will take some work, but stepping back a level, what if we did have, this is why I brought this up. If we did have value types and we said, why don't we have as this named argument, you're passing a structure and filling in the things you want to fill in over the default constructor for that type. But it's a value type, so you don't have an allocation and we have the ability to thread that through the compiler. I think that would actually solve all of these issues all in one go.
All of which issues in one go?
The issues about, we would definitely not need shadowing. We wouldn't need named arguments. And so this particular user interface work goes away.
Why wouldn't we need shadowing?
Because the shadowing here is over the named arguments. The only purpose of naming the local the same as the field is to expose that name at the call site for the use of passing a named argument.
You lost me.
Sorry. Joe, did you follow what I was saying?
I don't think it removes all the possible, reasons why someone would want shadowing, but in the specific case of, as involving named arguments, it definitely removes the concern that this RFC is talking about.
Right. So I think, bizarrely, we have a pretty good answer, which is that this is not the RFC we want. And that forcing this dot notation is not what we want. Accepting name as name prime in a named argument, possibly, but it's, as Sean points out, it's adding compiler complexity for little return. And it looks like, I think, value types, while a really fun idea, we don't have a solution to that for the type system yet. So the question is, warts are, I think, too intrusive for something that's this minor. And I think it comes down to, do we say that we have implicit assignment, that we're not shadowing, we're only binding at the call site? Or do we say we're not going to do anything until or unless we get value types?
I'm in favor of not doing anything.
I would be in favor of either.
Okay. Joe, will you do me a favor? Will you write up the options that we have for this RFC so we can talk about it next week with anyone else who's interested?
Yeah, so you're talking about these two specific options you named at the end, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, go ahead and mention anything else about this thought process you want to mention.
Okay. All right. I'll do that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we're at 1 o'clock.
Oh, dear.
No, we're at 10 o'clock.
Sorry. Yeah.
No.
We are at the end of the hour. Do we want to go on with things, or do we want to
put a... I'm afraid I have to run. My apologies. That doesn't mean that people shouldn't go on.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think it's a fair place to stop.
Yes. Hopefully, I would like if we could have time next week. I discussed with Sylvan a thing while I was visiting him about how I think that the way that actors work and async IO things are delivered to them is backwards, which is a problem we've been trying to solve with like specializing TCP things, etc. But there are some interesting issues around that, which I'd hope if Sylvan's on the call, like Joe, if you're on the call next week as well, that we could talk through the idea a bit, which Sylvan thought was a great idea. I thought was a great idea, but there are some ramifications of it that we'd need to think about and figure out. I'd like to get it in your head and anybody else's who's around next week, if we have time.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited for that.
I'm super up for that. Thank you.
Cool. All right. I'll stop the recording here then in 3, 2, 1.